Hello, I'm Emma Desi, and welcome to another episode of Turning Readers into Writers. If you're brand new here, welcome, and here's what you need to know. This is a community that believes you are never too old to write your first novel. No matter what you've been up to until now, if you're ready to write your book, I'm ready to help you reach the end. I focus on helping you find the time and confidence to begin your writing journey, as well as the craft and skills you need to finish the book. Each week I interview debut authors, editors and industry experts to keep you motivated, inspired and educated on all things writing, editing and publishing. If you want to catch up, head on over to emmadesi.com where you'll find a wealth of information and tools to help you get started. Before we dive in, this week's episode is brought to you by my free cheat sheet, 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write. In this guide, I give you 30 ways that you can find time to write in the small gaps that appear between the various errands and tasks and responsibilities that you have in your day-to-day life. Now, you might be thinking that you don't have any time to spare, but I can guarantee these top tips will give you writing time you didn't think you had. If you thought writing always involved a pen and paper or a keyboard, think again. If you thought you needed at least an hour at a time to write your manuscript, I help you reframe that. You won't be disappointed. Get your free copy of 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write by going to emmadesi.com/30top tips. Okay, let's dive in to today's episode. Todd Sullivan, author of the Wind Chime series, teaches English as a second language and English literature and writing in Asia. He has had numerous short stories, novelettes and novellas published across several countries, including Thailand, the UK, Australia, America and Canada. He is a practitioner of the sword-fighting martial art Kumdo or Kendo and has trained in fencing, Muay Thai, Capoeira, Wing Chun and JKD. He graduated from Queen's College in New York City with a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing and received a Bachelor of Arts in English from Georgia State University. He attended the Bread Loaf Winners Conference and the National Book Foundation Summer Writing Camps. He currently lives in Taipei, Taiwan, and looks forward to studying Mandarin. So let's find out more about the Wind Chime series and Todd's life in Asia. Well, thank you, Todd, for joining me today. I'm really thrilled to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
I wonder if you could start just by telling us a little bit about yourself and what took you to Asia, because I believe you are in Taiwan at the moment.
Right, yeah. So, again, my name is Todd Sullivan. I am originally from America. For your audience, may not know, it's New Orleans. It's actually fairly common, like a fairly well-known place, Louisiana. And I came out here to Asia about 11 years ago, and I was 10 years in South Korea, and I've been in Taipei, Taiwan for about 1 year now. It's been just about 1 year.
And are you enjoying it there? Obviously, Asian life suits you. How does Taiwan, Taipei differ from South Korea?
South Korea is very fast. Like there's a saying that you are told when you first arrive in South Korea, it's like bali bali, which sounds exactly the way it sounds, which is like fast, fast. That's what basically it means. And so South Koreans, they do things extremely fast. They walk fast. They drive fast. They do their work fast. And so it's just a very fast-paced culture. Whereas Taiwan, it's much, much slower. And so, you know, it's a more relaxed here, more casual feel to the way they do things here. So that's basically the two main differences that I've noticed. It's just South Korea is really fast. Taiwan is much slower.
Well, nice. That was quite a welcome change of pace, I imagine. And I understand that Taiwan has beautiful beaches, which I've not yet visited.
I have not visited beaches either. You know, I came here, again, October of last year, and then around January is when the whole COVID thing became quite a big thing. Mm-hmm. And so basically how my life would have been if COVID hadn't happened and how it is now is actually quite different. So I haven't really done a lot here in Taiwan in the past year.
I should just point out for anybody listening in the future, we're recording this in October of 2020, and we're still in this sort of the grips of pandemic and lockdown and so on and so forth. But I used to live in Asia as well, and I love Asia. I think it's a marvelous part of the world. It mentioned in the introduction that you took part in an MFA in creative writing, which I know a lot more people are doing now. And I wondered, did you enjoy the course? What might have been one of your kind of biggest takeaways from studying literature?
So the MFA, I think one of the good things about MFA is that you do learn different literary writing techniques. And so that's, you could take that and use it for any other kind of writing. So that's the main takeaway, thinking about the language of the writing, thinking about the character. That those are the two main things, language and character. And so that's basically what I took away from my 2 years. It was MFA in New York, in Queens, New York. And so that's what I took away. Language and writing were the main things.
Because I think traditionally MFA programs have been very much about literary fiction. Was yours about literary fiction? I think a few more are now branching into genre and recognizing that genre fiction has its place as well. But was yours sort of more about literary fiction?
It was exclusively literary fiction, right. So there was no genre fiction. It was only literary fiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting.
There were no branching.
So talking of genre fiction, you write vampire stories. And I wonder what appeals to you about that particular genre of writing or storytelling?
Well, I mean, I was always into kind of vampires. So it began back in elementary school. And I just took it with me throughout the years that I got older, from elementary, high school, university, graduate, and then just on and on. But what appeals to me? I don't know. Maybe it's just an inclination. Like, when I was younger, I wasn't a big fan of Sesame Street, but I did like Convo and Count, the guy who counts the numbers and the blocks. After Sesame Street, I really enjoyed, for people who are a bit older in your audience, there was a very popular cartoon called Count Duckula and about a vampire duck. There was a book, Bunuclea, about vampire bunny. And so these are more or less for kids. Then after that, I got into Dungeons and Dragons, and there's Ravenloft, there's Strahd. Then after that, there's Interview with the Vampire, Anne Rice, Vampire Chronicles. And so really, I just always had interest in the whole vampire mythos. It just, I don't know where it came from, but it was always basically there.
Something appealing about it. Yeah, because it shows, actually, I'd forgotten that there were all these programs when we were growing up, but it shows that Twilight's just one in a, it's kind of made it fashionable again, but it's just one in a long history of vampire stories and lore and fascination with the kind of dark side of human nature.
Right, yeah. The woman who did Twilight, Stephanie Myers, I think her name is.
That's anyway, right, the author, yeah.
Twilight took it in a kind of a newish direction that hadn't been, generally vampires were, vampires for older people, at least not for kids, were much more tragic, much more brutal, much more dark. But hers, I think, people always say, I haven't actually read it, I did see the movie, but they glow or something. And so it's like a very different take on the whole vampire mythos, which is probably why it got published, because it was a unique take on something that's been done really to death. There's a lot of vampire literature out there. And so she had a new way of doing it. And I think that was obviously it was very successful for her.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of leads on to my next question, actually. I was going to ask about the tropes of the vampire genre. So traditionally, in most vampire stories, what might the common tropes be that if someone was looking to start writing in this genre, what might you guide them towards or suggest that they start looking at?
I mean, the old idea of the vampire, of Dracula, was it was the monster outside the city. So it was that terrible thing that kind of exists outside. And then for humans, of course, it's a metaphor for, I guess, the darker nature of humans, our darker half, because, of course, vampires are humans. They're not, a werewolf, which is something else. It actually looks like a human. And so that's the thing. They are tragic. originally they were tragic, they were damned. You actually probably didn't want to become a vampire because you are now damned, like an eternal damnation. That was kind of what the vampire mythos. And then there were kind of like the monster, the our monster have. So it's just kind of much, much darker back in the day. Because even now, for people who do play kind of video game, things like this, usually the vampire is the thing you're trying to kill. Normally that's not a character you become. So it's generally just something that's on the outside that needs to be vanquished, not something that, you know, people glorify. Back in the day, that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. And so do your novels tell that kind of storyline, or are your vampires seen in a more aspirational way, or a less frightening or a less outsider character?
No, they are the kind of vampires you don't want to become. So yes. No, they're not more aspirational. They are more, right, they're more traditionally the vampires who you would feel bad if you became that thing, I guess, of vampire mythos.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the person who maybe there aren't any tropes around this, but I'm wondering about the person who finds the vampire or comes in contact with the vampire. In my head, it's a woman, a vulnerable woman who the vampire decides they want to get their teeth into. But I don't know if that's just because I've seen too many movies, but is that something that is in fiction as well, or are there often kind of male protagonists as well in the vampire stories?
The vampire literature is very big. I mean, it's so big. And so what's your, that thing about the, like you were saying, the woman being seduced by the vampire, I think that's what you were kind of going for. But that's been done. I mean, there's vampire romance, it's a very, very big genre. So it's, if you write it, I'm sure someone's going to want to read it. If that's answered your question. Yeah, if you write it, someone's going to want to read it.
And so you being in Asia, because I think Asia does horror particularly well, maybe Japan in particular, but they have a fantastic take and a really dark take on horror. They do, from the movies I've seen that come out of Asia, they're not scared of really going dark and being very, very scary. Has that impacted your writing at all, the way you tell your stories? Have you found yourself getting darker?
No, actually, I don't know about other places in Asia. I know in Korea, where I wrote most of these vampire stories, because I was there for 10 years and I started writing the vampires in my probably third or fourth year. So my third or fourth year up to my 10th year. But I didn't realize until much later that in Korea, at least, the horror genre was kind of limited. There wasn't really a lobby going on because people who are 18 and younger can't even get access to it. And they're really big on violence being portrayed, like being shown to their kids. Because when I grew up, you know, I saw Poltergeist, Freddy Krueger, Jason. This is like elementary school because this used to come on Saturday TV in America. Whereas in Korea, again, everything is changing now because the cultures are mixing. But before, that kind of stuff was never, people 18 and younger were never really exposed to it. And the horror market the horror genre wasn't really all that big. It's changed now, but in the past, it wasn't really very big, in at least Korea, which I can attest to.
All right, that's okay. I didn't realize that. My thoughts were that it was very big there and that it was kind of quite common. Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, cool. So tell us about you. You said you started writing sort of 5-6 years ago. So what's your writing routine like now, and what prompted you to write your first story?
Well, I started writing the vampire stories it's been like a long time, but I guess this particular one, Butchers, and then the Vampire Season Extreme Horror, that particular version of it started when I was living in a place called Jeju. And what started it, really the comparison that I'm using in the Vampire Chronicles is having a very bad job. That's actually what the vampires have. They have very bad jobs. And so that's what basically started it. I was making a metaphor for a job that's bad that you can't get out of. And that's basically what kind of started the idea.
Is that because you were in a job you couldn't get out of?
Yeah, I mean, you know, many people are in jobs that can get odd, though. You know, work for many people isn't all that fun. And that's what I'm trying to, that's what I hope really enjoys it. People who have a job, the many people out there who have jobs that they don't particularly like, but they're kind of, you know, there's no real way out. Because as a vampire, once you become a vampire, you're stuck. You know, there's no getting out of it until you die. And so that was the idea behind it.
Okay. So I know that you're busy. I know that you teach. And so how do you fit your writing time in around the kind of rest of your life, you know, your work life, your social life? I don't know if you have a family, but kind of around the other aspects of your life, how do you fit the writing in?
So previously, I would wake up around 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 or 6, and then I would write for 40 minutes, and I'd be up for writing for the day. And I did that like 5 days a week. And so that's it. And I actually only write one page a day, one new, unique page a day. And that's how I make it fit. I don't do a lot every day, but I do a lot over a long period of time. So if you write one page a day, 5 days a week, over a year, that, I'm not very good at math. That should be more than 200 pages. And if you do it consistently over, you know, 5 years, that's, you know, I don't know, 1,000 pages that you've written. So that's it. Just a little bit every day, consistently over time is what I did.
Fantastic. It's exactly what I kind of teach my students as well, is that you don't need to sit down for 2 hours a day. You just need to find a little bit of space regularly. And it's that kind of compound effect, isn't it? The more you do it, just keep doing a little bit, and eventually you'll get there.
I've actually found that people who write a lot at one time, I'm not talking about professional authors, but just people, regular people who want to write, like a lot at one time, they burn out whatever fire they had, and they don't tend to complete these projects that they begin. So I actually think just, you know, like a fire, if you just like do it a little bit at a time to keep it stoked, it goes a lot longer. Then you just sit down for like a weekend, you know, write like 10 hours. And then after that, you know, your output just dies down a lot after that.
Yeah, you're burned out. So do you tend to write a very clean copy? So because you're taking your time, you're writing, doing one page at a time, do you tend to sort of edit as you go along and make sure that the copy is as good as it can be before you move on to the next page?
I don't make sure they're as good as they can be. But since I write one page a day, that means that I do take a bit more time perhaps on that one page. But again, I only do 40 minutes. So no matter what, it tends to end around 40, 45 minutes, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But I'm a really big proponent of workshops, critiquing workshops. And so I have been part of that in real life for a long time, and then online for like the last 6 or 7 years, online workshops. And I have everything workshops. So I always have multiple eyes looking at what I write before I send it off to get published.
And where do you find your critique groups? Where has been a good place to find?
I've belonged to many over the years, but the one I recommend is, the way you pronounce this is kind of debatable, but I say Scribophile. So it's Scribophile.com. And that's the one I belong to probably the longest of all of them. But I actually have joined many over the years.
I've not heard of that one, but I'll link to that one in the show notes for people to go and check out.
Yeah, I recommend it. It's one I belong to for many years now.
And then your in-person critique groups, how did you find those ones?
I'm sorry, one more time?
Your in-person critique groups, the ones that you go to.
Oh, so that was just, you know, when I first moved to Jeju, you know, people talk, you meet people who like writing, and you get to a group. The reason why I don't do those anymore is because those groups always fall apart. Like, you know, normally we get through at least one story each, but then after that, you know, people stop coming to the group and things like that. So, but basically it's just, you know, talking to someone, and then they say, oh, we like writing. You like writing too? And there's another person who likes writing. The three of you get together, four of you get together, you do it for, you know, a couple of weeks, and then it kind of ends. But that's how I found it, just by a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Word of mouth. Okay, cool. So you do a lot of martial arts as well. I wondered if you'd tell us a little bit about that. It sounds like that's a big part of your life.
Right. When I was in Korea, I did a martial arts called Kendo, which is a sword fighting martial arts. I did that for the 9 of the 10 years I was there. And before that, I did fencing in America for about 5 years, starting around 19 years old. But yeah, I enjoy exercise. I enjoy movement. I enjoy dancing. These martial arts, there's a dancing component to them because like rhythm and distance and things like that. So yeah, I do enjoy it. It shows up in a lot of my fiction. My fiction tends to be very combat heavy. There's a lot of action, a lot of fighting going on. So it's just something that an inclination that I've always kind of had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we, when I was growing up, we had a friend who used to do kendo as well. And I remember as a child going to these reenactments with, you know, up to 100 men, women turning up in Japanese costume, I assume was Japanese costume, and in a battlefield. And I remember thinking, this is a very strange thing to do in Scotland. But no, he loved it. And it was quite a spectacle to see these amazing battles take place.
It's really fun. There's a lot of exercise. It's good exercise too. So I recommend it to people.
I also wanted to ask you about, I think it's an art project called For the Gods Open Eyes. I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about that.
So it's a web series / graphic novel. And it is, I started doing this about 3 months ago. The idea began and then been growing since then. So it's a superhero genre based on African mythology, African religion, African ideology, because the guy who first approached me from it is from Africa. And so that's the source material. And from there, I built like character and narrative and, you know, plot and things like that. And it takes place here in Taipei. So it's a kind of an interesting mix of Africa and then Taipei, Asia, and then America, which, you know, superhero genre, I don't know if it's born there, but definitely is where it's most known. Mm-hmm. At America.
So it's a graphic novel, but when I've gone on Facebook and sort of had a look at the page and things, there's a few of you on video, it looks like doing a read through or doing I'm not sure what it is.
It's a read through. So it's we're working on the first season right now. We did episode 1 last month. Episode 2 of the second edit just came out today, actually. And there's like maybe 10 different actors who are in the different episodes. It's 12 episodes for season 1. Yeah, we have read throughs basically on Monday night where people, you know, we look at the material, listen to how it's read, make changes depending on what needs to be changed. So it's kind of like a workshop, actually. I'm really big on workshops. And so it's kind of like a workshop where we get together and just figure out what works, what doesn't, what should be changed, things like this. So that's what those are. Those videos are just clips of us doing the read-throughs.
And so you said there's a season. So where is it that you're doing it as an audio production or a video production, the final product, you know, the final edit, if you like?
Each one is each episode, it's like a mini episode. So just imagine a regular episode that comes on TV. These are only like 6 minutes long, about 6 minutes long. And yeah, just like a regular episode. So a condensed 6 minute episode that's going to be on just online. So YouTube or anywhere that there are videos is where you can probably find it. But YouTube is the most common one.
Uh-huh. Cool. So what are you working on at the moment in terms of your own fiction? What's next in the pipeline for you?
Right now, I have the third in the fantasy series, The Windshine Chronicles, which should come out in March 2021. So that's the third book. That one's going to be a novel. The other one's with novellas. And that one is called Blood Stew. And I'm like editing, revising that right now. And besides that, though, I have to begin the third one in the Vampire Chronicles. But mostly I'm kind of working on just For the Gods Open Eyes, like that project. I'm still writing for that.
Cool. Your Vampire series, is it a three-parter, or will there be, do you envisage more to that? Is it more in the series?
None of the series have like a definite conclusion, because the way I'm writing them is that each book has a central plot. So they're like something starts, there's a middle, and then there's an ending. But the characters themselves go on to a new type of plot, and there's like other additional characters that are added to book two, and then some of those characters go, like there's main characters that go throughout all the books, but basically it's different characters that kind of are in each volume. So there's it just goes on, I guess, until, well, it just goes, it's going to probably go on indefinitely.
So they are part of a series, but you could read them as standalones if you wanted to dive in at book number two first.
Right. I am writing them so that you don't have to read the ones that come before. Like, if you do read the ones that come before, it enhances your understanding of the thing, but you should still be able to read one by itself and more or less completely understand what happened.
Okay, cool. So listen, where can listeners find out more about you and your various projects online?
The easiest place is probably social media. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Those are probably the easiest ones. I've guested on podcasts. I've guested on, I've done blogs for different people who have blogs, interviews. But easiest place is just really just Google my name, Todd Sullivan, Sullivan. I've done enough now that my name kind of has, like, things just kind of come up just from the Google name. And so, yeah, if you just Google my name, you should find beginnings of information about me. And if you follow that, you'll find more and more.
And what is your handle on Instagram?
I think it's Denevius, Denevius. That's what it should be, Denevius. Same for Twitter. They both should be the exact same thing, Denevius.
Lovely. Well, that's great. Thank you, Todd, for your time today. I really appreciated talking to you.
Ah, no problem. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I really enjoyed talking to Todd and learning about his experiences in Asia and what the horror scene is like over there. But one of the biggest takeaways I had from my conversation with Todd is how much he manages to write on a relatively small amount of time each day. He has made it his daily mission to get up that little bit earlier and fit in just 40 minutes a day to write one page of his book a day. And look at him now, he has published multiple books in two different series, and he's working on a web series with his creative arts team. So it just goes to show that if you are consistent, there is a fantastic compound effect, and before you know it, you'll have a finished book on your hands. So I hope you got a lot from that. Please let me know in the comments what your biggest takeaway was. And of course, if you've enjoyed the podcast, then please leave a review wherever you get your downloads. Until next time, take care.